Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Oh, so gross. So gross what you can mine out of a face diaper. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. I love this story. And here's something interesting. I hope you're doing well. It's amazing what you can share on Facebook these days, as if something major has shifted in the air. So all of a sudden, you can question the Wuhan virology lab, and you can put up questions about COVID, and you can question vaccines, and you can question Pope Fauci. You can do all kinds of crazy things on Facebook these days, as if they are expecting some shoes to drop. And so they need to start changing the narrative a little bit. So we're going to go through that and several other stories. And some of these are pretty funny if you have a bit of a sick, twisted humor like I do. So like Joe Biden, who had his little face-off with Vladimir Putin. Could you imagine what that was like? Probably a whole lot of pauses and silent moments there. But before that, he was asked a question about Putin and got into that. And then there was this just totally bizarre. Now, I think more and more people, now they won't say this publicly yet on the left until it's time to try to exalt Kamala into this role, but it's becoming increasingly obvious that, you know, Joe is just kind of an old guy and he's got some old guy issues. So it was like about a 6-second pause. Now, there's my dad would call that a senior moment. You know, when you're getting a little older and you're like, this happens to me on the radio and I'm 55 and I'll be rocking and rolling and all of a sudden I'll just lose it. That whatever thought was next, whatever sentence was next is just gone. But usually I'll acknowledge that and go, well, I just lost it. It's gone. Whatever I was about to say, I'm sure it was going to be great. And so forget it. I just had a senior moment. Let's move on. But not the president. He just flat out just time travel something. Just stop. So you'll hear that. And then Jon Stewart in a hilarious exchange with Stephen Colbert. I mean, late night comedy is dead. It's just late night commentary from liberals. But I miss the days, don't you? When comedians, especially late night comedians, whether they were liberals or Democrats or not, would literally rip everybody. That was the beauty of it. That's the beauty of comedy. Is they'll go after anybody. Nobody's safe when you have good comedians. That's just the way they play the game. I'm not endorsing it. I'm just saying that's the way it is. But the Jon Stewart thing with Stephen Colbert is hilarious. So we'll do that. And Kamala won't go to the border. But Trump's going back. So there's that story. And then at the end of the show, I'll get to the story. The moment of silence heard around the nation, written by my friend Dr. Michael Brown, shown up in a lot of places online. But I'm going to pull it from the stream. Reason number 478, why I totally have a man crush on Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. But let's start with this. So for those of you on Facebook Live and YouTube Live, do you see this? This is one of those lovely blue masks that most of us aren't wearing anymore. And I just kind of messed up the inside of it with a bunch of different colors and just kind of grossness to show you a little visual representation of this story, which I love. And I shared it on Facebook, and it's still on Facebook. It's like I'm waiting for Gabriel to blow his horn and Jesus to come back. A group of parents sent their kids' face masks to a lab for analysis. Here's what they found. We've been told for well over a year the widespread forced public masking, this is in townhall.com, should be implemented because even if only moderately to slightly to negligibly effective at curbing the spread of COVID-19, there are zero drawbacks. What's the harm? They asked. It's only a minor inconvenience. They bleat. If it saves one life, it's worth it, they implore. Meanwhile, we on Team Reality have not continued to point to real-world data that shows masking to be entirely ineffective. Not only have we done that, we've also maintained that forced public masking, especially long-term, has negative societal and even health ramifications that the powers to be are all too happy to ignore. It only stands to reason, Scott Moorfield at townhall.com goes on to say, that one of those health ramifications would be the fact that millions of people, particularly children, have been forced to wear and carry around pieces of cloth they've continually breathed through for hours on end, or as I affectionately call or refer to as face diapers. That's me saying that, not him. What lurking pathogens might be found on these disgusting contraceptions being incessantly handled, stuck in pockets, and mindlessly tossed on books, tables, and desks? What a great question. Well, one group of Florida parents sent a batch of masks worn by their children to a lab to find out. Oh, good job, mom and dad. Via the press release, so Gainesville, Florida, June 16th. A group of parents in Gainesville, Florida, concerned about potential harms from masks, submitted 6 face masks to lab for analysis. The resulting report found that 5 masks were contaminated with bacteria, parasites, and fungi, including 3 with dangerous pathogenic and pneumonia-causing bacteria. No viruses were detected on the masks, although the test is capable of detecting viruses. The analysis detected the following 11 alarmingly dangerous pathogens on the masks. So these are little kids wearing their little masks off at school, whether it's the blue one you buy in the store or the cloth ones you buy on Amazon, right? So they tested all of those. Here's the 11 things they found. 11 wonderful, beautiful, make your day kind of things they find on a child's mask that the school systems in the blue states mostly are forcing them to wear. Streptococcus pneumonia, that's just pneumonia. Tuberculosis, no problem there. Meningitis and sepsis. This is what they're finding on the inside of these masks that kids are wearing at school. One day, okay? Keratitis and granulomatous amoebic encephalitis, pneumonia, bloodstream infections, meningitis, UTIs, resistant to antibiotics. That's Acinetobacter baumannii. The next one is Escherichia coli. That's food poisoning. The next one is Borrelia burgdorferi. That causes Lyme disease. No problem there, right? Cornobacterium diphtheriae. That's diphtheria. No problem there, Steve. Legionella pneumophila, Legionnaire's disease. Staphylococcus pyogenes serotype M3. That's severe infections, high morbidity rates. And Staphylococcus aureus, meningitis once again, and sepsis. Half of the masks were contaminated with one or more strains of pneumonia-causing bacteria. One third were contaminated with one or more strains of meningitis-causing bacteria. One third were contaminated with dangerous antibiotic-resistant bacterial pathogens. In addition, less dangerous pathogens were identified, including pathogens that can cause fever, ulcers, acne, yeast infections, strep throat, periodontal disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and more. The face mask study were nearly or freshly laundered before wearing and had been worn for 5 to 8 hours, most during in-person schooling by children's age 6 to 11. And that's what we've been doing to our kids for the last year. And who's going to pay for that? Not to mention depression, anxiety, suicide, and thoughts of suicide. We'll pick it up there when we come back. Yeah, no kidding. You need a lifeline, especially if you're a little kid in America, and we've slapped a face diaper on you for the last year. That's why I was reading that article from townhall.com. Here's the things they found. All these different really fancy names, most of it's in Latin, but stuff that gives you the following. Pneumonia, tuberculosis, meningitis, sepsis, food poisoning, keratitis, more pneumonia, Lyme disease, diphtheria, Legionnaire's disease, severe infections, and another one, more meningitis and more sepsis. So that's on these little kids, like 6 to 12 years of age, and some smart parents said, hey, let's grab these masks. Just one day, they're clean, they're new, and they wear them for a day, 5 to 8 hours, bring them home, send them off to the lab, and what do you get? You get this, a Petri dish that would probably make you throw up if you saw it. And that's what we've been doing to our kids. But since we kill them in the womb, and when they get old enough, and we stick them in a retirement center, and then we're worried about COVID, and then we decide to bring an atom bomb to a knife fight, and instead of focusing on the people that were actually really at risk with COVID, we kind of use politics to take control over everybody and everything. And when the vast majority of people dying of COVID are older people, especially in retirement homes, who cares? So if you're too young to scream or too old to scream, you can't hire a lawyer or pick up a gun, then you're disposable. God bless America. Good luck with that. Let's go to this one. Vast majority of Democrats support employers forcing workers to get the COVID jab, new poll finds. And by the way, stories like this you can share pretty much freely and uninhibited on Facebook these days, as if they're waiting for another shoe to drop here in the near future. The most significant challenge in fighting the virus pandemic has been the political polarization on the public health measures. Yes, because it's you stupid conservative Christians that won't get the vax because you obviously don't know the golden rule and don't care about your neighbor. So a typical Christian, right? Versus all the blue state people who care about their neighbors, unless they're in the womb, and then you get vaxxed. So a new CBS News YouGov poll released Sunday shows Democrats and Republicans remain deeply divided, no kidding, on an employee's right to either choose or waive the right to be administered a vaccine. The poll asked 2,300 adults in the U.S. between June 8th and 10th a series of questions about today's environment. And here's the one that's the most fascinating. Quote, suppose a private business or employer wants to mandate that if workers get coronavirus vaccines, in order to return to work, allowed to mandate vaccines for its employees or not be allowed to mandate vaccines for employees. In an increasingly polarized world, they write in this article from Zero Hedge, accelerated by the virus and vaccines, 79% of Democrats agreed that employers should be able to force their workers to get vaxxed. In contrast, only 39% of Republicans approve of vaccine mandates at work. The overall response was 56 to 44% in support of forced jab by employers. Most employers are encouraging employees to get the jab while some are requiring it. The legal risks of this mandate are quickly developing, but employers continue to stand their ground. Like we mentioned the other day, now you've got this increasing, now they're looking into it. They've got an emergency meeting this week, the CDC, the NIH, about young people, particularly young males, developing these heart issues. And that's only the information that's coming out. If we go back to this first story about these parents that sent the stuff off, the face mask to the lab, I'm like, really? Did it take us a year and a half to do this? Probably not. It's just that it's taken a year and a half for the truth to come out. In this environment, that shouldn't surprise anybody. So now you've got red state, blue state. Red states are going to say, yeah, we're not so hot on the mandatory vaccines. Blue states, they're all for it. Like here in North Carolina, we're barely hitting 50% vaccinated. Up in New York, they just opened up New York because they hit 70%. Our son lives in San Francisco, and they're at like 90% plus vaxxed, blue versus red. Blue, government, we look to the government for solutions. Red, leave it up to the individual. That's generally the difference between liberalism and conservatism in general, okay? So you got that going on. So you still have to fight and share. When you see truth bombs like this, put them out there. Put them out there. Be an agent of truth. What people choose to do with the truth is their deal. But we're called to share it. Be salt and light. So put this stuff out there. And I know for some of us, it's cost us relationships and it's disrupted households and small groups and Sunday school classes and neighborhoods, whatever. But again, ultimately, people cannot take care of themselves or their neighbors if they don't know the truth. So we're supposed to be people of the truth. So let's do that. Okay. This was really weird. Did you hear about this? Huh? Play on words. Did you hear about this? So this is Joe Biden the other day. They're asking him at the G7 about Putin. Okay. His upcoming meeting with Putin, which they just had. So this is really disturbing. If this had happened to Donald Trump as president, I'm sure the media would have been saying, I think he just had a mini stroke because this is just not normal. Like, I'll take a dramatic pause while I'm doing radio. And Rush Limbaugh used to do that all the time, like I was just doing. In this case, it's a little more bizarre. Are we ready with this, Seth? Okay, check this out. Now, just watch. Listen, if you're watching on Facebook Live or YouTube Live, you'll see this video. But on radio, you're going to hear it. So just listen for all of a sudden, the president goes radio silence, okay? Here we go. Let's play it.
What do you say to Vladimir Putin?
To answer the first question, I'm laughing too. He has made clear that the answer is, I believe
that's almost 8 seconds.
Essentially,
let's go back.
That he was.
Let's cue that back up, Seth. Let's go back. That was almost 8 seconds. I was timing it right here on my handy dandy iPhone. I was timing it almost 8 seconds. Now, the first part that you have to catch is now they should probably get some kind of a copyright or a patent, something. It's got to be copyrighted. The laugh. When somebody asks a question you don't like and aren't prepared to answer, you just laugh. Kamala Harris has got that down to a T. Have you ever been down to the border? No, you, Kamala. Lester Holt the other day. No, you. And we're going to the border. We're going to the border. We're going to the border. Typical politician speak. No, no, ma'am. You. You haven't gone to the border. Well, now there's the whole laugh thing. Like a kid caught in the headlights and you don't know what to do, so you have this really awkward laugh. Let's play it again. So just listen to this. This is almost 8 seconds. Quote, unquote, the most powerful man on the earth. And whether he – now, all right, so Deborah on Facebook Live, maybe he was listening to an earpiece. Maybe. But when you're the president of the United States, all these things matter because you're the guy, right? Allegedly. Now, this had happened with Trump and he just went dead silent. I'm sure the left media would have been screaming. I think he just had a mini stroke. Okay, play it one more time. Let's go. Oh, there it is.
I'm laughing too. They actually, well, look, I mean, he has made clear that, the answer is
okay. So
I believe he is in the past.
I had to say something because on radio,
acknowledge.
You can go ahead and cut that. On radio, if you go silent for 10 seconds, the computer system is going to assume you got a big problem and they're going to just load an old show in. So I had to say something. But that's going on the president of the United States. And they're asking him the question. It's all in English. So it's not like he's listening on an earset at G7. And so he's talking to Vladimir Putin. Putin speaks a little bit of English, probably speaks more than he's willing to. But then they got the interpreters just like at the UN and stuff. So there's that. But not in this case. That's all in English. But it doesn't matter when you're, God bless him, just losing it. He is losing it. So the man with the most powerful job, visible job, governmental job on the face of the planet, the quote unquote leader of the free world, is just freezing over and over and over again. And that's where we're at with the presidency in 2021. Okay, so maybe not so funny. But when we come back, you're definitely going to laugh. Jon Stewart versus Stephen Colbert. We'll be right back. Okay, what should we do first? Just having a little fun. Every once in a while, I'm like, okay, let's just have a little fun. Do we go to the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert video? Which is about the Wuhan virus and the Wuhan lab of the same name. Or the head of the world's biggest family has died at age 76. And the details of that, well, how big was his family, Steve? You won't believe it. I mean, it's shocking. All right, I'll hold on to that. But let's do this one. All right, so Jon Stewart was on Stephen Colbert's show. So Stephen Colbert making a big deal because now they're back in person, I guess, at the theater, wherever they do the show. And the issue of the Wuhan virus, the China virus, as President Trump would call it, and the Wuhan lab, the virology lab there in Wuhan, versus the wet market, versus the bats that are like 600 miles away. And this is hilarious because I don't think Stephen Colbert is liking where Jon Stewart went. But Jon Stewart was not going to be stopped. This is hilarious, logical, and clear thinking. And it's just beautiful. So I don't want to hog that experience to myself. I want us all to be able to enjoy this. So let's do that. Are we ready? Let's do the Stephen Colbert. Jon Stewart comes in and takes over Stephen Colbert's show. Let's go. Go ahead.
I mean, like, there's a chance that this was created in a lab. There's an investigation.
A chance?
Well, but if there's evidence, I'd love to hear it.
There's
I don't know.
There's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. That's just a little too weird, don't you think? And then they ask those scientists, they're like, how did this... So wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan respiratory coronavirus lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle. And you're like, no, if you look at the name... Look at the name. Let me see your business card. Show me your business card. Oh, I work at the coronavirus lab in Wuhan. Oh, because there's a coronavirus loose in Wuhan. How did that happen? Maybe a bat flew into the cloaca of a turkey and then it sneezed into my chili. And now we all have coronavirus. Like, come on.
Wait a second.
See, now Stephen Colbert, okay, go ahead and stop it. Stephen Colbert doesn't know what to do here because I think he's legitimately shocked that Jon Stewart goes here. And Jon Stewart's just mocking everybody, every institution, every media outlet, every person that thinks a bat from 600 miles away somehow made it to the wet market, landed in somebody's soup. They ingested it. The next thing you know, we've got 2 or 3 million people dead around the world and the world economy destroyed, all because of some crazy little bat flew 600 miles and landed in somebody's soup in Wuhan, China. And no, that he's just being logical, which is almost illegal anymore. Just being logical. Hey, it's the Wuhan coronavirus lab, virology lab, corona, where they do what? There's only three places. Did you know this? One of them's right here in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. There's only three places on the earth that are doing gain of function research and specific to coronavirus. Three. Two of them are in America, didn't come from here, and the other one is in the coronavirus Wuhan epidemiology lab. So that's just hilarious and right on the money. Hey, that was so funny, that part. Oh, a pangolin kissed a turtle? Right. Okay, that's what happened in the wet market. And then, you know, it got out. And the next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire or just dead. So just amazing. And so the tide is turning. So be encouraged by stuff like this. The tide is definitely turning. So if you want to start posting back on social media about calling out things on the vaccine, make sure you check your facts, by the way. Are we talking about actual aborted baby parts or fetal cell lines? You need to make sure you're dealing with reality and make sure you're accurate. But calling out what's going on with the vaccines and what's going on with the vaccine complications and what's happening with the heart conditions of these young men that have gotten the vax. And calling out Wuhan and now the world, the G7. I heard this the other day. I haven't looked to verify it. The G7. Good job, Lisa, on Facebook Live. I never stop. Good. Don't ever stop. The G7, I think, put out a statement the other day going, yeah, we're okay with an extensive investigation into the Wuhan coronavirus virology lab. And of course, you got to say, hold on a second, but China's involved with the World Health Organization. And the World Health Organization is just a puppet of China, it would appear, which is why Trump defunded it from an American perspective. And now the G7's coming out, I'm telling you, there's all kinds of shoes that are going to be dropping between now and the end of the year. And they're trying to get ahead of it, just like the Fauci emails. So all that's going on. Okay, pay attention, be salt and light, keep sharing the truth. Do it with love. Now everybody's sitting there going, you know what the difference between conspiracy theorists and non-conspiracy theorist haters is? About 12 months, all that kind of stuff. Hey, you're not to the end zone yet, everybody. So for those of you that are playing that game, and now you've just changed the date, so Trump's going to retake the White House, you know, sometime in August, you need a little dose of reality as well in many ways. So be careful out there, people, okay? Okay, the head of the world's biggest family has died at age 76. Now, how big does your family have to be to get that title? This is from CNN, so asterisk. The head of what may be the world's largest family has died in India just this past Sunday, according to the director of the hospital where he was treated, Ziona. Ziona, who went only by his first name, died on Sunday at the age of 76. So if you're going to have the biggest family in the world, how big is your family? He had, get this, 38, not children, wives. He had 38 wives and 89 children, according to a tweet from Zoramathinga, the chief minister of Mizoram, the northeastern Indian state where Ziona lived. The patriarch belonged to a Christian tribal sect that promotes polygamy as God's will. We were talking about this. I talked about this yesterday. You can't just take the Bible and make it say whatever you want it to say. Does the Bible record things that are uncomfortable? Yes, but the Bible doesn't necessarily endorse everything it records. Take, for example, polygamy. Everywhere where you find polygamy in the Old Testament, what else do you find? A train wreck, wreckage. But in this case, 38 wives and 89 children. I don't get my own four kids' names right. What do you do with 89 kids and you're 76? By the way, I love my wife. We have our challenges, and that's just one. But with 38, how did he live to 76? You got 38 wives and 89 kids. How did he survive that long? It doesn't say he was deaf. That probably would have helped. But that's just 38 wives and 89 children. Holy cow. Okay, since we're talking about funny stories, let's do this one. Trump going to U.S.-Mexican border. He just cracks me up. As Kamala avoids going, Biden's border crisis worsens. From the Daily Wire, just yesterday, June 15th, former President Donald Trump announced Tuesday that he's traveling to the U.S.-Mexico border as President Joe Biden's border crisis has continued to worsen and Vice President Kamala Harris has repeatedly avoided traveling to the area. Quote, I have accepted the invitation of Texas Governor Greg Abbott to join him on an official visit to our nation's decimated southern border on Wednesday, June 30th, 2021, Trump said in a statement. Quote, the Biden administration inherited from me the strongest, safest, and most secure border in U.S. history, which is probably true. And in mere weeks, they turned it into the single worst border crisis in U.S. history. It's an unmitigated disaster zone. If this weren't bad enough, Biden and Harris won't even tour the scenes of the wreckage they created or come down and visit with the Border Patrol and ICE heroes, risking their lives to defend our nation at the time when the White House is doing everything it can to make their job totally impossible, Trump added. What Biden and Harris have done and are continuing to do on our border is a grave and willful dereliction of duty. My visit will hopefully shine a spotlight on these crimes against our nation and show the incredible people of ICE and Border Patrol that they have our unshakable support. Unless, of course, you're the current president and vice president. But this is where Trump, I think, can be really helpful. Is he's just like a little bomb that goes off every once in a while. You drop him over here, you drop him over there, and it gets people's attention. We'll see, because he doesn't have Twitter. He doesn't have Facebook. He doesn't have Instagram. So what's he going to do? Do you think CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, ABC are going to cover it? Maybe a little blurb. But odds are they won't say a word. Conservative media will probably cover it. And then Greg Abbott will be down there. So it's going to make some news. But I think it's great. I think this is a great role for him just to be a spoiler and just show up every once in a while. Like, where's Waldo? And have a little rally. He's going to start those up again this summer. And then this December, I mentioned this before, he and O'Reilly are doing 4 stadium-size events, like indoor stadium-size events. And I looked at one in Florida, and decent seats were $300 a piece. The VIP seats down front were $7,500 a piece. And I think the cheapest seat's $100. That's all the way in the back. So that's going to be wild. Here's some more stuff, just some more facts, in case you're, wondering. From the same article in the Daily Wire. The disastrous border numbers for last month represented a staggering, get this, 674% increase versus May of 2020, when 23,000 illegal aliens were apprehended. Last month's numbers were the worst numbers in more than 2 decades because we stopped the wall, we stopped enforcement, and when you elect somebody like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the left, you just put up a big sign up, just wave your banner, open for business, come on up. And what are they going to do? They're going to come up. As they risk their lives, get caught up in human trafficking, we throw kids over the wall. And that's a human crisis, right? But do the liberals care? No, they say they care about kids. Give me a break. They only care about power. We'll pick it up there when we come back. 2 more really important stories. This is Steve Noble. Hang in there. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you as always, talking as fast as ever. When my dad was alive, he's with the Lord now, he used to watch the show a lot, which I appreciated because my dad was very much a liberal. I think he voted for Reagan. He was a Reagan Democrat in 1980. I don't even think he voted for him in 84. I may have that reversed. Man, voted against him in 80, voted for him in 84. Whatever. At one point, he was a Reagan Democrat. And it was funny. We used to get in these arguments. Because he'd say, well, I'm an independent. And once I kind of started to get awoke to political things and started to pay attention and started to get educated, I had become an activist by that point, 2004, but I wasn't on the radio yet, I think. And then I remember going, wait a minute, because I always thought when I was younger, high school, college, I thought my dad was a conservative or a Republican, didn't know the word conservative back then, but a Republican because I remembered him liking Reagan. But Reagan had Reagan Democrats, like a landslide of them. And then I remember talking to him, and once I started figuring things out, I'm like, whoa, hold on a second, Dad. You keep calling yourself an independent, right? Yeah. Okay, so then I just started going back through presidential elections for a few decades. And he had voted for a Republican once. And so I said, with as much respect and love as I could, which sometimes isn't much at all, I'm like, Dad, you're not an independent. You're a Democrat that maybe screwed up once. But you're not an independent. We used to go at it all the time. It's just a blast. He was a lot of fun. I miss him, but I'll see him again. I do not grieve as those who have no hope. Okay, this one really upsets me. especially on the heels of telling that abortion clinic story from yesterday. U.S. Appeals Court rules North Carolina's 20-week abortion ban is unconstitutional. Okay, let me just be real, just graphically, brutally honest with you so you understand this. You need to understand the truth. When you get to a 20-week abortion, 20-week, so the baby is about the size of, you know, half a loaf of bread at 20 weeks, you know, pretty much fit in your hand. But when they do a 20-week abortion, that's not the suction apparatus, because the suction apparatus can't pull that baby out. That's for like 14 weeks, 12 weeks, 10 weeks. Okay, the most common one's about 10 weeks. They can do that with a little suction machine. But now with a 20-weeker, at 20 weeks, that's dismemberment. Okay, they have basically these big forceps, and the pincher part at the end has teeth on it, and they literally are just pulling parts out. Okay, then they have to reassemble them in the POC room, products of conception, to make sure they got them all, because if they leave anything in there, then that can cause infection, which could kill the mom. Forget the child. But now we're worried about the mom. So that's where they reassemble. That's what you have to do at 20 weeks. Okay, so they say that's unconstitutional. To ban that kind of barbarism is unconstitutional. What do you think our founding fathers would think about that? Hey, the Constitution says you can dismember children in the womb. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which is you're violating all three of those. And by the way, is that a human being? Yes. Biologists don't even argue that anymore. Are you a science denier? That's not up for question. A unanimous three-judge panel in a federal appeals court, probably the Fourth Circuit, upheld the lower court ruling that North Carolina's ban on abortion after 20 weeks is unconstitutional. A blow to abortion opponents in one of many such cases currently percolating through federal courts. Several pro-life organizations and more than a dozen Republican states supported North Carolina in the effort, of course, as they should. 20 weeks. 20 weeks to ban abortions at 20 weeks, which is absolutely Nazi-esque barbarism, is unconstitutional? When did our Constitution become like a chapter in the screw tape letters? This is towards the end. Now listen to the hiss of the snake. This is Planned Parenthood. Today's ruling is an important victory for our patients across North Carolina, Planned Parenthood South Atlantic President Jenny Black said. Abortion remains inaccessible for many North Carolinians. Really? How? And we will continue to protect and expand access to this essential health care. Who calls dismemberment of a 20-week-old child in the womb health care? A Romans 1 person. That's who. When people can make decisions about their pregnancies that are best for them, thank you, autonomy, it's all about me, families thrive. Really? And we build communities where each of us can participate fully and with dignity. Where's the dignity when you're dismembering a 20-week-old baby in the womb? That is the vision that we are fighting for, and the court's decision today brings us one step closer. God help us. And when this country eventually implodes, and I believe it will, we'll have earned it. We already have. What stays God's hand? I have no idea, other than grace and mercy and patience. All right. Reason number, 480-something to love and have a man crush, for me anyway, on Ron DeSantis, who we did a little straw poll quickly on Facebook Live, and I asked, would you rather have Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump run for president, be the next president? And it was definitely DeSantis by probably 70 to 30 by the looks of it. So check this out. The moments of silence heard around the nation. Our friend Dr. Michael Brown wrote this in the stream. On Monday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed HB 529 into law, mandating between 1 and 2 minutes of silence to start each day in the state's public schools. Said DeSantis, quote, the idea that you can push God out of every institution to be successful. I'm sorry, our founding fathers did not believe that, unquote. As for the purpose of the moment of silence, he stated at a news briefing, quote, we think it's something that's important to be able to provide each student the ability every day to be able to reflect and to be able to pray as they see fit. As for the involvement of teachers, the bill is explicit, quote, a teacher may not make suggestions as to the nature of any reflection that a student may engage in during the moment of silence. So the children will be told to remain silent for the designated period of time, during which time, within obvious parameters, they can do what they like. They can pray in whatever form they desire. They can close their eyes and rest. They can think about what's coming the rest of the day. They can imagine whatever they want to imagine. There are no guidelines and no restrictions other than the fact that for at least 1 minute, but not more than two, they cannot talk. Praise the Lord. Or interact with each other in other ways. Or use their cell phones. Just silence. I love that. The quote, the bill actually says this. Legislature finds that in today's hectic society, too few persons are able to experience even a moment of quiet reflection before plunging headlong into the activities of daily life. Young persons are particularly affected by the absence of an opportunity for a moment of quiet reflection. The legislature finds that our youth and society as a whole would be well served if students in the public schools were afforded a moment of silence at the beginning of each school day. Do with it what you will. Just be quiet. Minute, 2 minutes, whatever they decide, but no more than two. Then you get people on the opposition. This is kind of funny. Of course, not everyone's happy with the bill, with one disruptive protester claiming, "You're playing political games with our freedom of speech. You're playing political games." But, Michael Brown writes, how, pray tell, does a moment of silence impact a student's freedom of speech? And isn't it ironic that in these days of compelled speech in our classrooms, that this protester is upset about compelled silence? Before the bill was signed into law, some Democratic legislators raised concerns that HB 529 would violate the separation of church and state. Which, by the way, the wall of separation of church and state, my offer stands, if you can find that in the U.S. Constitution, the wall of separation of church and state, I'll give you $5,000 in cash. Okay? Steve at thestevenobleshow.com. Just show me in the Constitution where it says that, wall of separation between church and state. Senate Minority Leader down in Florida, Gary Farmer, said, "It would be a good thing if we could all take a moment of silence every day and reflect and meditate a little bit on things that are important to us. However, the framers of our Constitution were very careful to separate church and state." No, they weren't. All they wanted to say, and all they did say in the First Amendment, for those of you that want to know, is that the state is not going to basically set up a state religion because they came from where? Where, class? Where did the early colonists come from? Oh, that's right, Europe, where they had state-sanctioned church. England did it, and that's what created the Anglican Church. So it went back and forth between Protestantism and Catholicism when the state was the church. And so our founding fathers were like, nope, we're not going to do that. And certain states in America, the colonies, had state denominations. This one's Anglican, this one's Presbyterian, this one's Congregationalist, and they didn't want, all those states said, this is where Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists comes in, when he told them, there's a wall of separation between you guys and the government. The government can't tell you in Massachusetts what your state denomination is going to be. That's a state issue. And our colonies, states, early on, had those. So that was saying the government is not going to come tell the church what to do. That was nothing about the church speaking into politics, a pastor talking about politics, or even politicians, or talking about the upcoming election. It had nothing to do with that. That's all a bastardization of the First Amendment. Won't establish a religion, or what's the second part? Oh, that's right. Prohibit the free exercise thereof. Which is why all the church shutdowns in COVID were all bogus. They're all a violation of the Constitution, if that matters. So these Democrats in there are like, I'm like, you guys don't even know the Constitution. You don't care to know the Constitution, and it's just like something that needs to be removed. It's like a skin condition. You just got to get rid of it. Can somebody please get this thing out of here? Can somebody get this thing out of here? This is really in my way. What is that, sir? Ma'am, what is that? It's just the Constitution. It's like 200 and some odd years old. It's outdated. It's like the Bible. Give me a break. By the way, the truth has no expiration date. So whether it was written in 2000 BC, 6080, 1618, 1789, whether it's in the Bible or in the Constitution, if it's true, it's true. Doesn't matter when it was written, because truth does not have an expiration date. But truth gets in the way, does it not? Again, I'll take you back for the sake of this show for years when you talk about the culture and government, politics, whatever's going on in this country. You want to study that in the Bible? You want to understand it? You only need one book and one chapter. The book of Romans, chapter 1. That's all you need. We don't like the truth, so we suppress it. We replace it with a lie. Women's health care, as opposed to killing babies, as an example. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Pastor Chad Harvey, Cross Assembly. When is the time to fight? He's been going through a series on Revelation. When do we as the church fight your government, your city government, your state government, your federal government? And when do we turn the other cheek? When do we divest ourselves from earthly things to focus just on spiritual things? When's the time to fight? Theology Thursday tomorrow with Pastor Chad Harvey. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.